Wow, I'm just so thrilled, so happy to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me, and what an honor. So, yeah, I want to start by telling you that my spiritual path and that door that Lynn was mentioning open for me, wide open, since I was a very little child. I was close to 3 years old when I had a near-death experience. And what happened was that at the time, my parents work and they would leave us at the care of a maid. I was born in Bogota, Colombia, and there I lived with my parents and my two sisters at the moment. And then this lady supposed to take care of us, of course, and that morning my parents left for work, and she just, when they were not home, she would not pay attention. And then she just left and went to her room. And my oldest sister, who was close to 4 years old, and I just look at each other and it's like, oh, no one is watching. And we decided, let's go play. And we went to play at the back of the house where there was a patio. And in the patio, we found a ball. And first thing we did, just look at a tank. This was a tank that was sitting in a corner in the patio. And we decided, oh, let's play cash across the tank. The purpose of this tank at the time was to collect water for hand washing clothes, because back then we didn't have a washing machine. So next to this tank, there was a flat surface for scrubbing the clothes. And this tank was huge. It held about 900 gallons of water. And this is another thing, and is that people have the misconception that because I was born in Colombia, I come from hot weather country. But the thing was that Bogota is a city high up in the Andes. I think it's about almost 10,000 feet high up in the Andes. So of course, up there in the mountains, the temperature can get really low. So very early in the morning, the temperature could be about 30, 40 degrees Fahrenheit. So I tell this to you because that was one of the striking things that day when I fell into the water. So what happened was that my sister sat in that flat surface. I went to the other side of the tank. So she was a little safer because that was a bigger surface. I went to the other side and it was a thin edge. And I just bended my legs and I was leaning very precariously in this tank. And then, of course, at 3 years old, 2 years old, who's going to think anything about any danger, just having fun. So my sister at that point threw the ball at me, but she didn't apply enough force. So what happened was that the ball fell in the water. And then I thought that I could grab it, so I leaned forward. And when I leaned forward and touched the ball, it rolled on the surface of the water and I lost my balance and fell into the tank. So this is when the first thing I felt, like I just mentioned, was the sense that this water was frigid cold. And it was just like, ugh. And then it came at that moment, the horror of realizing why I cannot breathe. Up to this point, I never have been in a pool. We didn't have a bathtub. So my head never had been under the water. I did not have any idea that if you fall, or if your head is under the water, you could not breathe. So I'm now like in like the first shock of this frigid water, then now the realization, I don't know why I cannot breathe. And then when I am experiencing this state of absolute terror and wanting to get out of this water, and in this desperate attempt, there's nothing I could do. I didn't know how to swim. I went from that state in just a blink to one of absolute peace. It was like, I didn't know what happened, but now I was in the state of complete well-being. And it was the sense of freedom, peace. Wow, this felt so good. And then this was the thing I always like to mention is all the contrast I experienced, because there was one thing, this tank was completely made of cement and it had a roof on top, and it was also very early in the morning. What I go with all this space was very dark. So the last thing I saw when I fell into this tank, looking around in this desperate attempt to come outside, was the darkness of the space. And then when I went into the state of absolute peace, the first thing I saw coming from the bottom was a light. And this light was like the light of a candle that was soft, but was enough to illuminate my whole watery surrounding. And then it was the other incredible contrast is that I live in a house that was very noisy, and the last thing I heard was my heart pounding in my chest very loud. It was like a loud drum, boom, boom, boom. And the moment I entered into that state of peace, that was the other incredible thing, was the realization of there's absolute silence. It's what I call or describe as the silence behind the silence. And let me tell you, I crave this silence for the rest of my life. Even when I grew up, I would just, I would go hide into closets, chapels, wherever it was, because I wanted to find that silence. It was absolutely peaceful. So I am experiencing this state of silence, peace, joy. And then I started to see bubbles in the water. And it was like, wow, these bubbles were surrounded by light. And it was by chasing these bubbles that I just look around. And then I saw a body suspended in the water. And at that moment, the incredible thing is that I had the clarity, I had the realization that that was my body. And wow, it was the incredible thing is was the feeling of, at that moment, the feeling of familiarity, the sense that this already had happened before, and that I was just like observing. It's like at that moment, I sensed the eternity of who I was. And I had the clarity that this already had happened many times. I already had changed costumes or clothing many more times. And then it comes the other incredible contrast, and is that I was born as a very sick child. And sometimes we will wonder why children, will come to this world this sick. And at the end, throughout my life, I have also just realized how everything has a purpose. And at that moment, it presented to me in the sense that it was there to give me contrast. Because I spent almost the first 3 years of my life feeling so unwell. And at that moment, I didn't even know what to feel well was, because I always had been sick. And I am experiencing this state of complete well-being. So what happened when I saw that body? My reaction was like, I'm not going back to there. I'm not going back to that body. So what I did was just turn around and left. And the moment I turned around and left this body behind, and I imagine just feeling free, feeling joyful, feeling happy, I started to see flowers that were blooming from nowhere. This was majestic. And then all sense of dimension disappeared, and then I was picked up by these flowers. And I started to just be carried by these flowers. And I just always put the analogy that is like going back to the womb, where you don't have to do absolutely anything. You're just pretty much being done. And I am just there lying on these flowers and, oh, nothing to do, nothing to desire, nothing to look for. And then in just a flash, I appear in the maid's room. And at the time, it was normal in Colombia that the maid lived in the house with the family. And then she was lying on her bed and she was listening to soap operas in the radio. And I look at her from above, like I was floating in the ceiling. And I just said, oh, that's Maria. But she was completely unaware of what was happening to me. So from there, again, in just a flash, in a blink, I appear in my mom's path. And my mom was on her way to work. At the time, she didn't have a car, and she was getting close to her bus stop. She had to cross an entire neighborhood to get there. And then at the moment I saw her, I was again like floating above her. And it's when I said, this is the amazing part of this whole thing, because it's this validation of the whole experience. At that moment, I said, oh, that's mom. And guys, my mom stopped. She did not give another step. She did not move. She didn't even like hesitate. You know, I always say my mom is an amazing, she was so intuitive. But I always say to people, it's not just about the intuition, but learning to listen to our own intuition. And my mom was like that. She always listened. And then when she stopped, it was in her mind, she thought something is happening at home with one of my daughters. She knew. And she turned around and started to run back home. And then at that moment, I saw her and I'm like, oh, that's mom. But then I started to get distracted by the realization that wherever I turned my mind, I put my mind, I could go. So I turned my head, and if I saw a dog at the end of the street, I love animals, whoop, I was with the dog. I saw a tree, a park, I was there. So I started to play this game of going places. And it was there when, again, in just a second, I appeared in a realm that was made of pure, bright, intense, shiny light. And wow. Let me tell you, this was the first time in my nearly 3 years of life that I felt that I was home. And it was again this sense of familiarity, like, oh, I'm just coming back home. And it was that feeling that I had, like I put the analogy, like I had left in the morning to go to school. And I was just returning in the afternoon, like not even 3 years had passed. And I felt like I was welcome, like, oh, I'm just home. And then at that moment, something amazing happened. And it was that although I had seen my body in the water, up to that point, I did not have the realization that I was not Ingrid. And it's when I had that realization, like, I am not that person. I am not that body. I am not that. and I realized myself as a being of light. And I felt like I was dissolving, like I was becoming part of the whole. And then right there, this went even farther, because it's when I experienced what I call the state of non-self, like what I call, I'll describe as nothingness, the state of nothingness. Some people get afraid when I say that I experience nothing. And I said, no, because it's actually is that sense that you are out of the box to just kind of give some kind of explanation. Like everything you knew, everything you thought you knew is not what you are. You're more and beyond. So it's actually the nothingness that encompasses like everything. It's the state of absolute wholeness. And I just say to people, the moment people ask me what nothing means, and I said, the moment I tell you what is, it becomes something. So I really don't have description for it. I think it only can be experienced. But to say anything, I would just say that it's a state of absolute just presence, pure presence, consciousness. And I was in just this state of absolute joy, peace, presence. And then at that moment, my mom, this is the other amazing thing, my mom arrived home, and although we live in a big house, she knew exactly where to go. And she directed herself to the back of the house where there was the patio, and my sister was still there because she was doing every attempt she could to get me out of the water. But like I mentioned to you, she was close, just 3 years old, close to four. She was too small. She couldn't really get me out. But and now I know the purpose of her was to show my mom Ingrid is there for sure. And I cannot get her. So that's, she told my mom Ingrid is there. My mom, she worked with children. She was a teacher, and she had received training about CPR, and she knew what to do. She got me out of the water. She said that I was like a raggedy doll, that there was really no color in me. There was no pulse, there was no breathing. And she started to do all she knew to revive me. But at that point, guys, I was so disconnected from this body, from this reality, that I did not feel absolutely anything she was doing. And now it's like, again, I fell in just a blink that I had jumped from the tallest building in the world. And it was that sense of like being vacuumed, like being pulled. And there was nothing I could do to stop this. And I just started to fall and just like, and I really did not want to be back. And I knew that I was back when all the feelings of discomfort and the lack of freedom and the sickness of the body and everything was back. And oh, I was not a happy person. And yeesh, that's when things started to just be really difficult for me and for my parents, because I really did not want to be here. And another, and one thing that I always mention is that after my near death, is like we were talking at the beginning, like the doors never close for me. And incredibly, I always mention this. And not long ago, I will go into the beings of light and all that. But not long ago, I received a message that says that, of course, the door never closed, because in reality, there is no door. There never has been door. What we call the kingdom of heaven or consciousness or the universe is there for all of us always. We are the ones that put the door due to conditioning, due to whatever it is, to belief systems, to ancestors' beliefs, whatever. But it's just the realization that wow, we can remove that door that we put, because there is not really a door. But okay, when I came back, things were hard, and I came back really with an awareness I clearly did not have before. Because when I came back, I look at my parents and I really didn't see my parents as just a biological parents. To me, I had experienced oneness. So I look at them and I saw them as my equal. The other thing is that I saw my body. You don't imagine, like, what is going on? The shock. I am not this child. I am not a child. And so it became really hard for me to connect and to play or to have communication with other children. Because to me, it was like, what is happening with these people? They don't know anything. So for me, it was like, what is going on with all these people? And I also came with skills I did not have before. So not long after my near death, imagine I was close just to 3 years old, and I could read, I could write, I could resolve mathematical problems, I could put together complex puzzles. So it was this little child carrying all this. But what happened is that I didn't feel that I belong, and I will look at myself in the mirror and I will cry. And I will go to my mom and I will say, you don't understand. This is not me. This is not my name. What am I doing here? I should not be here. My mom didn't understand it at the time. Imagine, early 70s, they did not have idea of their experiences. None of this was known. They didn't understand. And of course, at that age, I did not have the language to express all the knowledge, or nobody to understand what was happening to me. So I became really angry. I refused to eat. I did not want to play with anyone. Things became really hard. But thankfully, the help that I needed came in the most remarkable, beautiful, I guess, miraculous way. And what happened is that after my near-death experience, I started to have what we know today as out-of-body experiences. And I would just close my eyes, go to sleep, and started to experience colors, movements, frequencies, stuff, and I would appear in this realm of the light. And I was experiencing this realm of the light. Oh, wow, I wanted to sleep, because I wanted to be there. And then in one of these journeys, one day, I was completely surrounded by starlight figures that were shining everywhere. And I'm just like, oh, absolutely mesmerized by this. So now I wanted to sleep all the time. So imagine that was crazy, because of course and the thing is that my parents, of course, fired the other lady that almost let me drown, but they hired a new one. But this lady didn't pay much attention either. And if I was sleeping, that was better. She didn't have to deal with me. So I spent a lot of time sleeping. So I now wanted to just be there with these lights, with this place where I felt so good. And in another journey, one day, one of these lights that was shining in pure gold approached me, and it shaped itself into a human form, and it touched me. And it's when I said, oh, you are a being of light. So it was showing me, I am like you. And I just snapped away, and I'm awake, and I'm like, wow. Now I wanted to go, just imagine, just wanted to sleep. But of course, there has to be balance. So I couldn't not be the girl that is left forever. So incredibly, to balance things, one day I was taking a shower, just relaxing, oh, having a good time, when I saw a blue, intense, shiny light shining in the bathroom. And it's when I said, wow, now the beings of light are here. And then from that day on, I started to see them everywhere. And although they didn't say anything or do anything, their presence was so magnificent. I felt love. I felt company. I felt so much peace, joy that I started to heal. So this is amazing. And later in my life, what I realized with this experience is that the beings of light, God, was trying to tell me that home is not a place. Didn't have to be there, nor be here. Home is not a place, it's a state of being. Because when I started to see the beings of light here and feel that joy, that sense of peace, I started to heal. I started to talk to my parents, to my sisters, to play, to relate with other children. It was the sense of like just being at peace. But there was another thing. I was very detached from my persona, very detached from my name. So I would just throw tantrums about things like that. So there was a night when the lady was calling me to eat dinner. And the maid kept calling me, and I just was like aggravated. I would get aggravated because I just felt like, ugh, don't call me like that. So she came and she's like, Ingrid, we're calling you to go eat dinner. And I just look at her and I say, do not call me like that. That is not my name. And she looked at me and said, okay, so how should we call you? What is your name? And I just said to her, I do not need one. Oh, they had it. They're like, okay, you go to bed. And so I imagine just dealing with a little girl like that had to be hard. And then I went to bed and I was very upset. But that was the first time, guys, in which I, for the first time, started to hear. And then I heard a voice talking to me in a very soft, very loving, almost like talking in a secret, like in a whisper. And it says to me, it's going to take time for them to understand that names are not needed in the realm of the light, as you already know. Wow, at that moment, I was like, oh. It was incredible because it was the sense like, oh, this feels good. I get it. I am not crazy. Now I know why I don't need a name. And that made me feel so good. Of course, later in life, I also understood that our human experience, having name and having a career and having all the things and the titles, and it's important for our human existence. But at that moment, it was just knowing that, wow, I know that in the essence of who I am, I don't need a name. And then the beings of light also said to me that all the things that were happening to me and all the things that were going to happen, so they were already saying there's more coming, are all for you to just evolve, to grow, but are not for you to keep. Someday you will share and you will communicate and give these experiences, share these experiences with others. But they also say, for now, you have to remain silent because people are not going to understand. And that was hard. I just said, but how come? I mean, why they're not going to understand? What is not to understand? So imagine, I would just, it was sad. And but yeah, they were right. I started to realize later that anybody, of course, they didn't say do not talk, but it's best if you don't. So at the beginning, I realized that every time I mention anything or say anything or try, people were always looking like and was saying, like we do normally with children, oh, they're imagining things, they're dreaming, they're creating stories. So very soon I realized that they were right. But imagine how different this made me feel from everyone else. So there was a moment in my life I was really feeling sad, and it's when I started to question and I started to ask the being, so like, why me? Why this is happening to me? And it's when I received one of the most beautiful messages and answers. They said to me, because you are special. And I said, what do you mean when you say that I am special? And they said, oh, this was the beautiful thing. They said, everybody, everyone is special, but not everybody knows it yet. And they say, someday everybody will know, and someday everybody will be able to see us too. But it's going to take time. And they since very young, I knew it was going to take many years before I could actually share openly this experience with other people. But they also say that I will not be alone, and that there will be people in my path, and they were right, because among the first people that actually validated and believe my experiences was my mom. And what happened was that when I started kindergarten, because they told me that I should not talk, so I had to express myself somehow, I started to do drawings. And then I was drawing and I was painting beams of light absolutely everywhere. And then at school, every book, every place, I was painting. And then this teacher was very curious. My teacher, she just came to me and she said, like, Ingrid, what are those? The stars, the sun? And I looked at her just not thinking anything. Just look at her. And I said, no, these are my friends, the beings of light. So imagine that the teacher was like, oh. And they already thought that I was strange because I was very quiet. I was very, like I mentioned to you, I was very smart. So I was a very different kind of girl. I would just be in contemplation a lot. And so at that moment, she thought, okay, we better call your parents. And I just felt really actually mad at her about that, because I just realized I have to be quiet. And my mother came to school and she showed all the drawings. And it's when my mom also realized and discovered that I could see, and I thought everybody could see them. I didn't know some people couldn't. It's when I realized that I could also see auras, because all my drawings had auras. So the teacher is showing all this to my mom, and there was a moment where I want someone to believe me. So I turn and I look at my mom, and I just look at her with these eyes and said, Mom, those are the colors that we wear, and these are my friends, the beings of light. And of course, like I mentioned, my mom were with children, and she looked at me with these big mom open eyes, like pretty much like, be silent. My mom didn't want me to be in trouble, of course. So at that moment, I had to go quiet. And then I just felt really sad. And that day, on the way home, is when my mom told me, I believe you. And I said, you do? Why? What is happening? My mom says, is when she confessed to me that she believed me because she also could see things no one could. And she said she had been able to see what we call spirits since she was a little child, but that she had to learn to be quiet because people were not going to understand. She was born in a very Catholic. She was raised as Catholic. Her family was just very close to ever talk about any of those subjects. So she was actually forbidden to talk about that. So my mom said, I don't want you to be in trouble. It's better you just be quiet. And this validated what the beings of light said to me. So I just realized, yeah, I better go quiet. And then the other person that came after my mom. So like the insula I said, people will present in your path. The next person was my grandmother. And of course, now with my mom, I feel, oh, now I am not alone. Oh gosh, so you don't imagine the comfort of knowing, whoa, this feels good. And the next person that came in my life to bring incredible teaching was my grandmother. But the other thing before mentioning my grandmother is that by the age of 6, I started to see spirits. Then it was, to me, the first encounter with a spirit. If you want to learn all about it, it's in my book. It's a very long story. But I was petrified in fear. So it's when I ran to my mom after all that happened and I said, Mom, the beings of light and the spirits are not the same. And because this, yeah, the spirits that caused me fear. And then she's like, she asked me to explain better what is that I saw. And when I explained my mom, she started to cry and she's like, oh my gosh, she thought that we were seeing the same thing. And it's when she started to cry and say, oh, I think that you see angels. And I said, Mom, but they don't have wings. Because all I knew was the Catholic teachings, the books, they all have wings. I said, they don't have wings. And she said, no, but they have to be your guardian angels. So that was amazing because now I just felt like this is even more special than I thought. And then because I've been already communicating with beings of life for a while, I asked them. So the first thing I said, what is with these spirits? And the answer was amazing because they said, that thing that you call spirits, you, us, we are all the same. The only difference is the level of awareness you have about who you truly are. Wow. The other thing I asked them, my mom say that you are angels. Is that what you are? And this was amazing because they said to me, and I said, can I call you angels? And they say to me, you can call us whatever you want. And this is how compassionate is the universe, because they said it's pretty much the understanding that they were presenting to me in a way I could understand them. They present, all these beings present to us in the way that we just best understand it. And if I feel good calling them angel, if I want to see them as an angel, then that's what I will see. So that was absolutely beautiful. Then from there, I just, yeah, started to have this incredible, amazing connection with the beings of light later in my life. I could even smell them. I could smell their presence. I could sense them. I could hear them. I could see them. So that communion just continued for practically the rest of my life. And when my grandmother came to our house, she came, she lived in Venezuela. So in one of her visits, she came home and she brought a picture of this guru sitting in a lotus position with all this radiant aura. And I was like, oh my God. So I just like, that's what I see. And my grandma and I just started to talk and I realized that she was also raised as Catholic, but she just was having all these different ideas and she wanted to know more and learn more. So she just started to study other philosophies and religions. And she came with teachings from Buddhism, Hinduism, and she would join the Rosicrucian Order. She was just wanting to, she knew, she said, there's more, there has to be more. And then by the age of 8, she taught me how to meditate. And by the age of 12, she brought me to the first Buddhist temple, which in Colombia was something unheard. And then at this temple, they taught me how to do a breathing meditation technique. And when we were leaving the temple, I told the monk, my grandma is a very, very busy woman. I don't know if we can come back to the temple. And then it was incredible because the monk looked at me and he said, you never have to come back because you already have a temple. And I said, do I? And he said, yes, you are the temple. So wherever you go, at any moment, you can practice this meditation technique. You are the temple. So that imagine that incredible, amazing. So that's after that, my grandmother started to introduce me other spiritual teachers. I started to just learn so many incredible things. And by the age of 14, I was introduced to transcendental meditation. So started to practice this type of meditation too. And then later in my life, by the age of nine, I was learning Vedanta. I became part of another group where we were learning Vedanta called Agni Yoga. And I was reading books and learning Sanskrit, reading the books like the Bhagavad Gita, self-realization, or discernment, all kind of stuff. And so imagine for a child, so I was so different from everyone else my age. So for me, by the time I had a very, you would imagine, a very lonely childhood and teenage years at a school. I was bullied. Nobody wanted to really relate with this girl that was weird. So, yeah, I just kind of felt better with around adults. And there was not also too many people that at the time was in tune with all these teachings. So by the age of 19, when I went to college, I picked to become a scientist. And this didn't happen just right there. I also started to have visions of the future since I was 4 years old. And also by the age of 17, I started to have access to past life experiences. So imagine now by the age of 16, 17, 19, I could see things of the future and the past. So by the age of 4, when my parents brought me to see the ocean for the first time, and I looked at the ocean, I was so mesmerized by it. And that's when I said to my mom, I was so like gone into it, like my mom just, Ingrid, are you okay? And I said, Mom, when I grow up, I'm going to know what is under that blanket. That's how I call the ocean. I saw it as a huge blanket. And then when I was 5 years old, I approached my dad, all serious, and said, Dad, when I grow up, I'm going to become a marine scientist. My dad was like, okay, is that what you want to do? That's what you would do. But it's just I knew. And after that, everything that was related with the marine environment, with science, I wanted to do. And by the age of 12, I started to have visions, like I said. And by 9, I knew who my husband was going to be. By 12, I knew I was going to work for NASA. But by 14, I knew who my son was going to be. I even knew his name. So it was incredible. So imagine by 19, like I said, when I started college, I reached a point where I was tired to be different from everyone else. So imagine having all these incredible, gifts, but also feel that they have become a burden. Because I had also three beautiful sisters. I was at the age where, wow, the boys and parties and the life, our human life, just became really apparent that I was so different from all of it. And my sisters was trying to educate me and tell me, no, you have to wear this and do that. And I just felt like I am an alien in this world. But I wanted to be like them. So the moment I went to college, I just put it in my mind, I want to be like everyone else. And it's when the beams of light gave me kind of that moment of choice. It was pretty much, you want to teach, become like a spiritual teacher, which I didn't even know how that path would work at that moment in my life, or you just can continue your path, become a scientist and do your other thing. And at that moment, when they mentioned teaching, I said, I don't want to teach anything. I'm not going to teach this to anybody. I already have enough problems trying to talk to people and they thinking that I'm crazy. So I just said, I want to be like everyone else. Please, pretty much, please let me go. And at that moment, I said to people, it's not like, okay, bye forever. I put the analogy that it's like when you, because the beings of life became my parents. So it was pretty much like when you're going to college and you leave home, but it doesn't mean that you forgot that your parents are gone. No, they're still there, one call away. So same thing happened with the beings of light. At this moment, it was the sense of like, please let me do my thing. And then incredibly, the first boyfriend I had in college wasn't just, oh, because he would have been the spiritual guy, then yeah, I could not have really put my feet on the ground. He was a very grounded guy that liked to party and go out and had a band and play music. And oh, so it was, I started to kind of, yeah, just ground. I needed that grounding. But after that, again, I mentioned my book is written there because many, many, many sufferings happened in my life. Things that were very extreme, a lot of sufferings, ended up living later in my life in a war zone, almost was raped and murdered, robbed. I mean, it's just like crazy. Until I reached the point in my life, they actually, the day they gave me that choice, they said to me, when I said I don't want to take the path of teaching, they say that in 20 years I was going to understand. In 20 years, things were going to change. And that's what happened. 20 years later, without me even realizing it, I ended up going to India, meeting the Dalai Lama, and spending 1 week with him in Dharamsala, India, and realizing that, wow, that I had disconnected from what had given me the most joy in my life. That connection with the light, that connection with the beings of light, and I wanted it back so, so badly. So after that, my life of going back to alignment, of going back to connect, of realizing and wanting to go back to and discover the true nature of who I was reactivated again. And incredible experiences happening. I experienced again, went to that state of experiencing oneness and the, just all that, just pretty much I opened again completely that door again, the reconnection with the beings of light happened again. And it's when I started to ask important questions. I asked the beings of light, why my near-death experience happened when I was so young? And the answer was amazing because they said to me, it happened when you were so young because you were old enough to remember, but young enough not to be conditioned yet. So imagine, wow, that in itself was amazing. And then I asked another important question, like the more I began to alignment, like the beings of light said, is when you start asking the right questions, learn to ask the right questions and you receive the right answers. When I also realized that we have to go beyond the experience, like deeper into the purpose. What is the purpose of this? So I asked, what is the purpose of my near-death experience? And it's when they said to me, to bring the message of the power of connection. And I said, how come? And they said, look, what happened in the tank the day you drowned? you saw your body and you turn around. You at that moment, you made that decision because that was still part of the egoic mind. But that was not the plan of the universe. That was not the bigger plan. The bigger plan is that you were going to come back. Reason why you went to look for help. Reason why you went to meet the maid and you went to meet your mom. And I said, like, okay, if I wanted to get help, why would I stand with busy going to the maid's room? And I said, because that's the point. That's where you see contrast. I said, what do you mean? And they said, look, what happened when you went to the maid's room? There was no connection. And because there was no connection, she could not hear you. She did not even have any idea that anything was happening to you. What happened when you went and see your mom? Absolute connection, unconditional love. And that's when we know, guys, that love doesn't have barriers. Because look, I was in the spirit realm. My mom was here in the physical realm and she could hear me. That's incredible. And she could sense my presence, and it's when she turned around and went to get me. So imagine the person that was so far away from home was the one that knew where to find me, got me out of the tank and saved me. And the person that was a few feet away didn't even realize it. So they said to me, look what happened with the maid. Because she even mistreated her. There was no connection at all. They say when there is not connection, they will let you drown. Wow. When there is connection, we save each other. We help each other. We guide each other. We love each other. So that was absolutely incredible. And from there, I also understood the purpose of my uniqueness, which is something I had never understood, the uniqueness of each one of us. And it's when I understand that each one of us is a piece of a puzzle in the universal puzzle. If this piece is missing, the puzzle is not completed. And I always love to put the example of the fingers and the hand. Every finger is absolutely different, unique. But what happens if you cut this finger off? By itself, it cannot do anything. But what about when they work together? Wow, powerful. And at the same time, I always show, look, it's the uniqueness that encompasses unity, oneness. All the fingers tie to the same hand. So I understood, wow, each one of us, I am so important. Each one of us is so important. And it's when we have to go back to that place of become an observer of ourselves. Know thyself. Know that each one of us in our essence is that presence, that source, that space, that light. We are beings of light. And we're here to connect, to shine the light for each other. So to end, I invite each one of us to be that light in the path of each other. Don't wait, don't expect, don't. I think for some reason I got muted, but now I am on mute, I think. So just each one of us is the light, can be the light in the path of each other. So I invite you, each one of you, to be that light. So thank you very much. If there's any questions, I hope I didn't talk too much. I am open to answer. And it would be nice if I could see the people for 1 minute. You guys want to put your cameras. I don't know if that is low the connection, but that would be nice to see them.
If I'm just looking at the chat box. Please type in your questions if you'd like to answer, have a question answered. Lynn says, okay, from Elder and Sister Potter, how many beings of light were there?
What was the question?
How many beings of light were there?
At the beginning, or when I saw the first time, like when I had that, like the first encounter, it was like a whole universe of them. Like if you're stepping out in the at night and you can see lights like forever in the infinite, and that's how I saw them at the beginning. And incredibly, although they were all shining like lights, it was every time I was around with them, they didn't have to always transform, but I always knew who was talking, although there was not a mouth or a face or it's incredible. It's that sense of like the uniqueness of every being. And I always knew who was talking. So yeah, it all depends. At the beginning, I saw them like that. Later in my life, it would be just one, or it would be just two of them, or a lot of the time in here in the physical realm, I would just maybe would be always surrounded by two or three beings of light. But when I am with people, I mean, they can appear around people. They could be two, three, four. In areas where there's children, there's more. Like in hospitals, there's a lot of them. So yeah, it all depends.
And they asked, are there still a large group of them in contact with you?
Yes, yes. So I, this connection, the connection completely, but this is the other beautiful thing. Even there was a window of 20 years of my life where, like I said, it was like not this direct connection like I have now when I was little. Later, and I wrote about it. It's like how I realized, wow, they were there, they were there, they were there, or things that were happening. And they were not, later I realized, they were not just appearing as beings of light, but as like humans or animals or different ways. So it's when I realized, wow, like just to give you an example, there was a time in our life when we live in this neighborhood in Colombia. You guys, I don't know if you know, but Colombia was a country at war for like 50 years. And there was times where there was drug dealers and all kind of bombs happening in the city, everything. And we live in this neighborhood that was kind of dangerous. And suddenly in our door, a stray dog will come every day. And this stray dog, we never adopted him, but he will come every day. And he will walk with us from the house to the place where we had to take the school bus. That was like two blocks. And he will wait for us to come from a school and bring us home. And this dog did this for like the 3-4 years that we were in this school. And when we didn't have to, we finished the school, we didn't have to go back anymore, the dog disappeared. We cried because what happened to the dog? Of course, we thought he got killed, who knows. And later, now that I have the connection again, like all up, and I asked, like, what was the story with this dog? And they said, it's when they revealed that it's a being of life. So, and many more stories I have in the book that are incredible, of like beings that just appearing in the life, and they are appearing in the life of all of us. We just don't know. We don't realize it.
All right. And Doug and Denise ask, did your father have any of the same spiritual abilities?
This is hard to understand.
I'm sorry. Did your father have any of the same spiritual abilities?
Oh, my father. No, my father was more grounded, I would say. He wasn't that sensitive. Although, I guess my dad is a lawyer, so of course he's very analytic. He would have never mentioned any of this, never. But later, like recently in our lives, when I started just to talk openly about the beings of light, my dad was always wanted to learn also about other philosophies, but more to understand the human mind. And he confessed to me, like when he was about 3 years old, my grandmother divorced my grandfather. She left, and he was 3-4. He missed his mom so much, and he was crying for his mom so much. And one day he said he was in his bed and he saw, I guess, like I said, the beings of light present to us the way we understand them. So he saw a being, and he said that it was the Virgin Mary, and that this being said to him that it was not true that he did not have a mother, that he was never going to be alone. So, but he never ever talked about this. It just was recently. And he said that's the only thing that ever happened in his life that was different. But I was like, wow. So that was amazing.
They ask a further question later in life. What about your sisters? Later in life, have they too been able to have some spiritual abilities?
I think, look, this is amazing because we're four. I have three more sisters. The oldest one also became a lawyer. She's the more grounded. And she really never have experienced much of things like this. She's the less, I guess, the more left brain. But my two younger sisters are very sensitive. They live in a house for a while that, I don't know, you could call it a haunted house, whatever it is, but there was many spirits there, and we all could sense them. So it was a moment in which I realized, okay, yeah, I'm not the only one. Later in my life, my sisters started to also sense things, and my mom, of course, sensing spirits. Then I will realize on top of that, and I have heard these many times, how people that have disabilities many times come from families that have abilities too. So it would be an aunt of my mother or a great aunt of my mother. She was an amazing medium, to the point that I learned that there will be lines of people, blocks and blocks lining to come and talk to her. Because she had psychic and mediumship abilities. So I guess I was born in that bloodline where it wasn't, thanks God, my mom had disabilities and everything, I was understood a little bit at least. And that made it easier.
Okay. From David Larson, in your NDE, did you see Jesus or some higher being of light like him or like Krishna?
No, and I didn't. And incredibly, like I was mentioning it to you guys, is that, like I asked the beings of light, I did not have, like I said, I was 2 years old, almost three. And I was too little then to have any preconception or have yet the idea of, although my parents were Catholic, I didn't have yet the idea of Jesus or anything like, or Krishna or nobody. I mean, I just to put it in the context, I was 2 years old. So it's when the beings of light said to me, your experience happened when you were so young because you were old enough to remember, but young enough not to be conditioned yet. So I didn't have that condition. I was a clear canvas. I didn't have the idea I'm going to meet Jesus or I'm going to meet Krishna or I'm going to meet the Buddha. And I didn't have any idea of any. I didn't even know I died. I just learned later in life when I started to actually hear other experiences, see, oh, what? Of near deaths and everything. Yeah, I experienced that. Oh, I experienced that. Yeah, that too. Oh, what? Oh, I guess I died. See, so I was pure, but I just had that clarity. I know that I had existed long, that this is not really who I was, that I was more than this body, I had all these abilities, all this clarity. So that's what I came to know. But yeah, I didn't really. And even in life, when people ask me about names, again, I was, the way I perceived the beings of light, and the way I perceived the light was with no names, with no labels, with no, to me, it wasn't needed. So even nowadays, when people ask me, is the beings of light that you meet have names? I said, I never really cared to ask, because I didn't really even care to have a name myself. I knew later it was important. But I really never care for that.
Okay, next question from David again. What did you think of the Dalai Lama? Did he seem to have some similar spiritual abilities?
Oh, I don't know the spiritual abilities, but what all came back to me was, and when I met him and he was talking about kindness and compassion and love. And I know that I was only 16 years old when I have learned, of course, all the Catholic teachings. And I just felt so much love for God. I felt so much love for Jesus. I was so in love with God that when I was 9 years old, I wanted to become a nun. I was like, oh. But I also started to realize that there were things that I didn't agree with. I didn't agree with the fear. I didn't agree. I was like, it was in my near-death experience, for me was, love is everything. How can I fear the one that loves me the most? That was my experience. I'm not to judge, to criticize no one, but that was my experience. And I just couldn't agree. So it's when I started to depart or wanting to learn other ways of thinking, other philosophies. To me, love, to me, compassion, to me, kindness was everything. So when I also met the Dalai Lama and just being here in this world, in this incarnation with so much kindness, so much compassion, so much love, I'm like, that's what is. I was 16 years old when I'm studying at that point Hinduism. I am learning Vedanta. I knew about Buddhism. I'm learning about Kabbalah. I'm learning about even other teachings. I am instruction and Christianism, everything. And I'm like, wow, I get it. The core of teachings is the same. The core is love. The core is compassion. The core is kindness. The core is joy. The difference is how we interpret the teachings. What do we decide to do with it? How we decide to do the rituals and stuff, but the core is the same. So to me, like when I went to India, met the Dalai Lama and have this, it was the point where I realized is go back to that compassion, go back to that kindness, go back to that love. And then maybe if I would have met the Pope, it would have been the same. It was going back, go back to the core of who you are. Go back to silence. This was the other thing. During my near-death experience, like I mentioned to you, I went to the place of absolute silence. What silence means? The place where you calm your mind. The place where you're not bombarded by thoughts. The place where the head is not telling you one thing and the heart other. The place of balance. The place of absolute connection with the divine. And then I learned that day in India, in all that trip that I did, was I have to go back and quiet my mind. And it's when I started to practice all the different practices to go back to quiet the mind, mindfulness, walking meditation. I meditate every day. I have become in trying to guide others to go to that place where we just go back to calm our mind, quiet the mind. So sorry for the long answer.
Well, that's great. we love long answers. You've had a number of difficult experiences that you've encountered in your life, and I'm sure part of that has been able to be able to show others how to encounter difficult experiences. And I don't, what are, you've had a brush with something that has become a very hot topic in the U.S. today. And I thought I wouldn't ask this question, but I'm going to ask it. What are your views about, since you've had come across this in your own life and dealt with it, what are your views on abortion?
I think that's, I usually, topics like that, I think there's no discussion, because because every person, we have to respect. You know, the most incredible thing in all my experience, even with the Beings of Light, is like they never even forced me to follow their way, to be their way. It's always they say, go what with your heart is telling you, what you feel is right. They said, go with your heart. I cannot tell what others have in their hearts. They have to live their own experiences. I cannot judge others, because if I go judging others, in reality, I'm judging myself. I don't know what is right and what is wrong for others, because each one have their own path. I can only really go with what I feel in my heart that is really right for me. And what is in my heart right for me is to love and respect everybody. And I just always just, the Being So Light said to me, Ingrid, your path is the path of gentleness. You're not here to convince anybody about anything or bring what you think or you know to anybody. I think that everybody is working and according to their own experience, with their own judgment, with their own, everybody, maybe whatever is the suffering that everybody has to have in their path, they will go live it. And you know, everything we do, like in my life, all the experiences, all the sufferings, like you mentioned, brought me to be actually more compassionate with myself and with others. So I don't like to take sides. I don't like to just say you're wrong, I'm right, they're wrong, they're right. I don't know why they're living the experience they're living. I don't know why each one of us, but one thing I know, there's purpose behind all we do. Even if the purpose is bring us to have so much suffering that we wake up, or have so shake us life so hard that we wake up, that we're able to go to that place where we feel love and we feel compassion for others and we feel empathy for others. But like I say, I think taking sides, say I'm right and you're wrong, is what creates more separation. What about if that person that is suffering at that moment for whatever she thing or he thing he did, we receive with love and compassion? What can we do to make this world better? What can we do to love more, to care more, to have more kindness, to have more compassion? Because otherwise we're creating more difference, more separation, more hate. What you did is wrong. Ooh. So am I right? Who knows? I mean, let's just go with the path of love, I say.
Well, thank you. We need not sides, but understanding, I think. Anyhow, the next question is, how have your experiences helped you as a scientist?
Oh, this is, I love that question. Yeah, that's good. Because, you know, one thing I have discovered, and I love to, and I, you know, working as a scientist, but one thing goes first. When I had what I call my big awakening, because when I was little, although I have the near death experience and all that happened, I cannot say I was awakened, because I wasn't really understanding. It just was happening naturally to me. So all these, but I didn't have an understanding. Later in my life, I had what I really call an awakening, is when I had the realization, wow, I am consciousness. I am awareness. I had this near death experience, like, wow, now I'm having this clarity. And then it's when, I got cut by my line just kind of got, for a second. Then I had this big awakening. I was still working at a big, like, organizations like NASA, the Navy. And then it's when I went there and I asked the beings of light, like, what should I do? Or what should I say to these people? You know, to, wow, because now I'm having all this clarity. And they said to me, the answer was amazing. Because they say to me, do or say nothing. The light of your awareness is all they need. Wow, that taught me a huge lesson, because it was having the clarity is not about what you say. It's not what you're planning to do. Be that light. Be that kindness. Be that awareness. Be that joy. And when you are that, wow, the people around you are feeling it, are sensing it. And I started to actually realize it. People would say, Ingrid, you enter this room and you light that room. And if they would change me to another office, no, you cannot take Ingrid, who's going to bring joy to this space. Or I would just say, this is incredible what we can do. I just walk along the corridors of the agency, and there was some scientists that were all serious. And it did not matter who this was. I would pass the corridors and I would do it in purpose. I would just go in this state of absolute joy. And even the one frowning the most, he would just look at me and smile and say hi. And people say, you know everything in everybody at the agency. And I say, no, I don't. But it's, I do, because it was just being that. And incredible, I say, after all the mantras I have learned all my years in Sanskrit, in Latin, in all these things, after all the mantras, all the praise, I said my most important mantra, the most powerful one, is when I go to the cafeteria, to the bank, to my family, and I said, how are you doing? How are you doing today? And I do it with the true intention, and I do it with that joy, with that love. Look at it, guys, those words can save somebody's life. You really mean it. So to me, it's when I realized, you know, science, the difference between science, the bridge between science and spirituality is in the head. It is not separation. Because at the end, you want to know something, and I'm already mentioning it. Spirituality is not about believing things. It's actually experiential. If you decide today, I say good morning with your heart, you're really living your spirituality. If you are, again, kind, if you are loving, if you are caring, you're already spiritual, no matter what you're doing. Even if you're a scientist, you're a doctor, you're a carpenter, you're a cook, it don't matter. So I said to people, actually, spirituality is science, because you have to be an observer, because you have to experience, you have to go do it. Otherwise, you're believing things. But if I really go and I am walking my talk, I am a spiritual scientist. And I started to go I used to go in oceanographic surveys all over the world, and I would be on the ships and the ship and the boat, and suddenly I would have a person talking to me, and we ended up talking about the most amazing spiritual topics. And I didn't even think it could come from somebody in the military or the cook or the engineer. So I realized, wow, people actually have a craving for this. They just don't dare to talk, because they feel, oh, I should not talk about this. This is embarrassing, or they're going to think I'm crazy, or they're not going to believe me. So there's no really bridge. It's all in the mind.
And the last question that we have here is,
what was the name of your book?
I cannot just mention it, but I can show it to you. So my book is called A Brightly Guided Life. And it's called How a Scientist Learned to Hear Her Inner Wisdom. So there I tell the stories, and I tell, like, I like it. What I like is that it's pretty easy to read. I wrote it in a way that I wanted to show people, look, it don't matter the sufferings we are in. If we learn that all of this is not happening to us, it's happening for us. It's happening for us to be more compassionate, to be more empathic, to be more open, to wake up in the truth of who we are. So it's just, I love the book because I never thought about writing it. I thought it was egotistic, and then it was the sense like, no, you have to share this. So that's the other thing people ask me, your book is brutally honest. How did you do that? And I said, if you're going to give the truth, you better give it completely with openness. Otherwise, don't do it. Or just do it little by little with the people you feel right. But once you feel ready, just give it. Yeah, another thing, just quick, if you guys want to learn any more, or just also come visit my website. I have a website, ingridhoncola.com. And I also have a YouTube channel. And I am in Facebook and all those places. So there you can find more about.
Okay, well, thank you, Ingrid. Lynn, you have some closing remarks, perhaps?
Yes, I just, in these times that have been so hard, I want to just share one of the last teachings I received from the beings of light. And it's this beautiful teaching about gratitude. The beings of light said to me, Ingrid, imagine how grateful every human would be if they realize that for you to exist, trillions and trillions and trillions of subatomic particles have to be in agreement. They said, Ingrid, you, Craig, Brenda, Lynn, Barbara, Danis, all of us, you are a divine intention. Wow. If we think about it, when I have a glass of water, I'm like, wow, this water is made of trillions of particles. It's a divine intention. I drink this water with gratitude. When I see a person, wow, you're not just the trillions. I mean, that divine intention is existence itself, is life itself. These particles are in agreement because there's love. So imagine looking at life like this cell phone, the pen, the book, the mouse. Wow. There's a divine intention everywhere. So it's just, let's go to that place of admiration, of appreciation, of gratitude. Gratitude is the higher energy, the higher vibrational energy there is. We are in a state of gratitude. We're in a state of connection. People ask me, how can I connect with the beings of light? Start by being grateful. And that door opens. So thank you.
Thank you. That was beautiful. We've really enjoyed it.
Thank you very, very much. Oh, I love being here, and I love sharing. And thank you for having me here.
We'll probably have Ingrid in person sometime in the future. So this probably isn't the last time you'll see her.
Oh, that would be great. I would love that.
With that, we'll end the meeting. Thank you very much.
Adios.
Adios. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here.